talk to us now and go to the TNT Radio Interactive live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT. George Christensen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the George Christensen Show for the final hour, and we're joined with a young bloke by the name of Barclay McGain. Barclay, I've known for quite some time. He's a policy researcher. He's a bit of an activist. He's a former political staffer. He was once chairman of the Gold Coast Young Liberal National Party branch, although you've got to whisper that these days because the LNP's tried to dissociate itself from Barclay. He now works for the Australian Taxpayers Alliance. He's been unashamedly politically incorrect during his career, which has raised both the ire of the left-wing media and the increasingly woke LNP, the Liberal Party and the National Party, and in Queensland, the Liberal National Party. It's great to have Barclay on the show. How are you going, young fella?
Not too bad, George. Hello to all the listeners and hello to yourself, George.
So I've given the real broad brush and very quick bio. Can you fill my listeners in on exactly who Barclay McGain is, and then we might talk about why the LNP is so upset with you?
Yes, certainly. So, you know, I grew up here in Queensland, and I've just been politically active essentially since I turned 16. That's the age when you're able to join the Liberal National Party. And since then, I suppose I've kind of taken on
I joined at that age too.
Approach. So what were you saying?
I joined at that age as well, actually, 16.
Brilliant. It's a great age to be involved. I think the younger people get involved, the better, because obviously you have more years on this earth, and as opposed to getting involved when you're in your retirement age or you're in your 50s, you've actually got quite some time to really make a lasting impact. And I've done my best to try and do that, whether that be on campus, in the think tank space, or when they allowed me to associate in indeed the Liberal National Party.
Yeah, right. So we'll start off with the media, just to understand what the controversy was that involves you, Barclay. I recall, and I don't know all of the details, but I recall that you had some YouTube or Facebook show or something like that. Right. You were interviewing schoolies on the Gold Coast, and you know, you were asking them about different political issues, and one person, not you, by the way, not anyone that was associated with putting it together, made a comment that other people may have found offensive or perhaps even racist, but it wasn't that's you, right, but you got attacked for it. Have I described that instance correctly? Can you elaborate on what happened there?
You're exactly right, George. So I was elected as the youngest chair of any Liberal National Party branch in Queensland. And we really wanted to take on, you know, a bit of a we had a lot of puff pieces that were written about us at the time, talking about the young guns on the Gold Coast, right? And we wanted to, I guess, revitalize the branch because obviously the Gold Coast is an area where the Liberal and National parties perform very well. And we wanted to see if we could really take it up to Labor and get out our mobilize our troops onto the ground. And we wanted to do a promotional video at schoolies. And, you know, obviously a lot of people might think, well, there's your first mistake, Barclay. But of course, we thought it would be quite a humorous interview. And we asked people a number of issues on topics like, what are your thoughts on Scott Morrison? And this is pre-COVID, of course. What are your thoughts on our Australian national flag and national anthem? And it was that question which elicited a response, which was, you know, we've got to stop celebrating a culture that couldn't invent the bloody wheel. Obviously referring to Indigenous Australians, and for my crimes, for my sins, I chuckled. And that is indeed what landed me in hot water, George. And it ended up all over every media tabloid. And it really, you know, as much as it was a tumultuous time for me personally, I was thinking, oh my goodness, you know, has this led me on a complete different trajectory to what I'd originally planned for? It also made me think more broadly about our society. It wasn't just an individual thing that hurt me, but it's like, well, hang on, surely we can't go through society having these taboo topics to talk about things like closing the gap and ways that we can do that which aren't all about virtue signaling or recognizing that Western culture has actually had far more benefits, particularly to our Indigenous Australians, than detriments.
Yeah, well, look, you're spot on with that. I mean, if we can't have the discussions without fearing cancel culture, then we're in a dangerous place, and we might talk about that in a little while. But what you were also working for a federal member of parliament at that time, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So I was working for federal MP Andrew Lemming. Obviously, you served I'm as a colleague with Andrew, so I'm not going to pretend to know
That's
him
right.
Better than yourself, George. But you know, he's very publicly known, I suppose, for being quite a maverick. He's someone who definitely it's hard to know where he sits on a lot of issues, and I think he appreciated that I came at it from a similar circumstance, that when I came forward and ushered my view on a topic, it wasn't for fear or favor, and it wasn't because I was, you know, channeling a certain line that my overlords were telling me to follow. And I think that's what I appreciated about Andrew at the time. I think anyone who meets him can attest that he's quite the maverick.
Yeah, look, Andrew and I didn't see eye to eye on every single issue, but I got to say about Andrew, he said to me early in the piece, there are either poodles in politics or there's mongrels. The poodles often rise to the top and get the glory and get the ministry positions and get all the fanfare, whereas the mongrels, you know, get beaten up by the media and get put in the never to be promoted file. And you said you'll have to pick which one you're going to be. Well, I already knew which one I was going to be, and I made mention of this in my valedictory speech, actually, as a politician. So yeah, the poodles and the mongrels is what I'll always remember Andrew Lamming for, and he was certainly a mongrel. I remember he did go into to bat for you, but obviously the pressure come to bear. Did they actually sack you at that time over that event? Did you get dismissed from your role as an electorate officer and booted out of the LNP, or what happened?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I had a meeting at the time. I think it was the Disputes Committee of the Liberal and National Parties. It's a star chamber of four or five men in their 60s and 70s. And they basically came to me as a young man. It's quite daunting. They came to me as a 20-year-old, and they pressured me into resigning because they dreaded the idea. Well, there was a fork in the road on their part. There was either, okay, we expel this 20-year-old and then we get media backlash, or he's allowed to remain in the party despite his transgressions, and then we also get media backlash, albeit just from left-wing publications, the readers of which are never going to vote for the Liberal and National parties anyway. So they wanted the third way, which is that I resigned of my own accord and we've gone separate ways. And that was, you know, yeah. I was, I suppose, intimidated into taking that path. Obviously on top of that, they wanted to cleanse themselves of having a Liberal and National Party MP employing someone like myself, who was, you know, going to be suspended and has just since resigned. So they actually had a stern word with Andrew Lemming, I'm told, and his hands were more or less tied. But 6 months later, I was allowed to return to work. It was a great privilege. I got to learn a lot. I got to go down to Canberra, the swamp that is Canberra, as I know you spent many years down there as well, George.
I've heard them call it in the Australian vernacular the billabong rather than the swamp, but I think it means the same thing.
Yes, the billabong, exactly. Yeah, so you know, I'm thankful to Lamo, and I'll always call him a friend. Again, you know, I think you pointed out just before, George, that you and him don't see eye to eye, and indeed, I'm similar with Lamo on a number of issues. But at the end of the day, he's always someone who we can have our disagreements and catch up with. Where there's a lot of people, you know, on the left and even some on the right side of politics who you'd say are quite malicious in the way that they approach politics, and it's all about backstabbing and being a bit of a viper. And you know, Lemo, to his credit, is very upfront with you, and I've always appreciated that with him, and he'll always be a friend.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a few other controversies, if I can call them that you were involved in over the years. Tell us about another one of the media attacks that happened on you quite unfairly.
Well, in all honesty, when I was, you know, obviously the media found out that I was being employed by Andrew, and as such, they pressured him into making him discipline me. And that was another media story in and of itself. And another recent one was 2021, where I, you know, decided I was invited to a Halloween costume, and it was big and topical at the time.
I saw this.
That Kyle Rittenhouse had just been he'd been found innocent.
Not guilty. Yeah. Yes.
Not guilty. Exactly. Correct. Right. And I thought, well, you know, it's quite emblematic of this guy who's had a lot of unfair trials and unfair procedures, and his life's been completely ruined. You know, I think this will be a bit tongue in cheek. And I'll go to, you know, get out my, my gel blaster and go to my friend's Halloween party. But sure enough, not everyone saw the funny side. Some people choose not to see the funny side. And then that ended up being a media story. And I was actually condemned by the Prime Minister himself in a press conference.
Yeah, yep, yep. I remember that. I got to say, my own take, that was incredibly funny. And isn't it interesting how, you know, there's just this level of hypocrisy that's out there. Someone can wear a Che Guevara T-shirt, you know, Che Guevara, a mass murderer, killed plenty of people, innocent people as well. But nothing would be said about them. But you ingest in humour, and yeah, look, it might be bad taste. A lot of humour's in bad taste, and that's sometimes what actually makes it funny, you know, because it is humour's got to be offensive. Humour has to be offensive at times.
I was just going to say one of the most impersonated people in Australian history is Ned Kelly, someone who, you know. For all of his endearment, is someone who, you know, shot and murdered quite a few people, and we don't look at that in the same way. You know, so I think that you know, this is a guy whose whole entire life has now been ruined and is certainly on only one trajectory, and that is to wherever he goes, he's now going to need security guards, because he is recognized in the eyes of the public, shamefully, as a murderer, when he's anything but. He was simply acting in self-defense, and thankfully, we can still trust some of the court systems, and he was found not guilty.
So the media, the fake news legacy media, went off their brain because you dressed up as an innocent man, Kyle Rittenhouse. What did they? I mean, you know, we will get into the issue of cancel culture soon, but what was the issue? I mean, you were obviously I don't mean any disrespect, but you were a nobody then. You weren't the head of the Gold Coast LNP. You weren't a member of the LNP. You weren't an electorate officer, or were you?
Time? So I was at the time, I was working with Andrew Lemming, been suspended by the Liberal and National parties. But you know, their issue was that I was being provocative, and that I was, you know, teetering on the edge. And I said, well, look, you know, if a Halloween costume does not excite you, humor you, or make you feel scared, or make you, you know, your eyebrows raise, then quite frankly, it's a bad Halloween costume. You know, I'd argue that this was a better Halloween costume than the people who just decided to rock up in pants and a t-shirt. So, you know, I like to think that there was a bit of interest in that. Yeah.
Well, I got to tell you that, you know, a lot of stuff gets dug out of your past, and I probably am going to hate to see what's going to happen over the course of the next 30 years as young people start getting involved in politics, because there's all the Instagram accounts and Facebook accounts and whatnot that happens on social media that'll be dragged back out into the public arena for them to see. But if it was around when I was a young fellow, there probably would have been hell to pay. Luckily, the media never found out about this. I went to a bad taste party of my own, Barclay, so I know what you've done here, and I know it's humorous. And it was the middle of the Afghanistan war, and I went dressed as a Taliban because I thought that's pretty bad taste. Now, there was no one that thought, oh, that guy's sympathising with the Taliban. You know, there is no one in their right mind that thought, oh, he's a, you know, Osama bin Laden lover or whatever it might be. You know, it was just bad taste, and it was funny. It was taking the proverbial, you know, and I think that the media obviously tried to paint a picture that you somehow supported the shooting of Black Lives Matters protesters, you know, just simply because you put on a funny costume, and nothing could be further from the truth.
And that's why the most important word in the English language, in my opinion, is context. And context to everything in our day-to-day lives is what it's fundamental to how we converse. You know, like, for example, I'm not going to say it on the show, but the F word, right? People say the F word when they're angry at someone, when they're happy, when they've just stubbed their toe. You know, it can denote almost any range of emotions. And that's the case for a lot of words, or even actions, or even in this case, costumes. You know, a Halloween costume is very different to someone who just rocks up at work. right? And, you know, you mentioned before about how, you know, in 30 years from now, we're going to end up with a lot of people, you know, having stuff dragged up from the closet back 30 years ago when they were 18 or 19. And we've seen that with Dominic Perrottet. He was, it was, you know, albeit I think there is a slight difference in, you know, what I did and then perhaps dressing up as a Nazi. But more or less, you know, context is very important. You know, he was raked over the coals for that as well. You know, and I think there was a lot of other things that we should be raking him over the coals on that maybe weren't related to that. So, but yeah, no, I think that's largely an issue that we're focusing on people's pasts. But the other side of the coin, George, that I want to point out is that you've got a lot of people joining political movements at a young age, and tragically, because of this fear of cancel culture, they're refusing to live a life, right? And I've had the sad burden of knowing a lot of people who you talk to them and it's almost like they're delivering a press statement, right? You just want to have a knockabout conversation on them, you know, off the record, discuss their political views on any given topic, and they'll frame it as in like, oh, you know, I'll decide on that matter at a more reasonable time. And, you know, that they're talking to you as though you're like the press and they're delivering a media statement, and they're too afraid to, you know, to go off script and maybe have some thoughts for themselves, and they're consistently wanting to toe a line to try and ascend the political ladder. And I think it's quite tragic because it means we can't have those conversations that we need to have about the issues in this country.
Yeah. Okay, well, look, we'll be back to talk more about cancel culture after this quick break on TNT Radio's The George Christensen Show.
You should hear what Kate Shimarani is talking about.
I was chased down Whitehall in my green cape. Yes, I do wear a cape. There's 3.2 million views on YouTube if you want to watch it. I was in my high heels by hundreds of police. I felt very special. And I was also arrested later outside Parliament. And then I was held in custody for 32 hours. And they used my keys to enter my property with an unsigned warrant. And they took my laptop, kept it for 6 months. But much later, I was then charged with something else. And I didn't go in their court. I just stayed at home, didn't bother. And they had a 5-day trial in the magistrates' court. And I was found guilty of holding these rallies or arranging them, whatever it was at the time, which I didn't do any of it. I just emceed them. So I got convicted and I got three fines, 600, 600, 600 and £180 court costs. That's 666 again. Are you smelling it yet, folks? Anyway, Boris and all his mates that the Metropolitan Police provide security for, and it was them that were in court, and all the TSG that came into Parliament Square battering everybody that were there, and they said in court that they were there to get me. They held parties while your loved ones were dying in hospital, but now he's resigned. You know what? I'd like my money back, and I'd like you to wipe those ridiculous charges.
Kate Shimarani on TNT Radio.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's news talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
You're with George Christensen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the George Christensen Show here on TNT Radio. I'm joined by young activist Barclay McGain. He works for the Australian Taxpayers Alliance. He's had a long involvement in politics, even at a young age, and has been subjected to what can only be described as cancel culture, where simply by asking someone a question, getting a response that was offensive, he was deemed to be the one who was the problem, and the media got him sacked, essentially, from the LNP, the Liberal National Party. He then dressed up in, admittedly, a bad taste costume, but of an innocent man, Kyle Rittenhouse. And for that, he got sacked from his job. Is that right? You did get sacked from your job at that point in time? I remember the Prime Minister at the time, Scott Morrison, came out against you. Have I got that
thankfully
right?
Thankfully, at the time, I was actually my employer, Andrew Lemming, actually stood by me through that time. And that's partially
great.
Why, as I mentioned before, that I was thankful to Andrew. He definitely recognised the context. And, you know, I think the sad reality is often, George, it does take someone to have a set of circumstances of their own where they've been unfairly persecuted, to then understand the circumstances of someone else who's been unfairly persecuted. And we've seen that play out quite publicly in the media for Andrew. In March of 2021, he was the subject of a lot of media based on, unfounded allegations that he was in fact that alleged that he was a sexual deviant, and completely unfounded. It's great that earlier this year he's been receiving a number of payouts from, lot of the legacy media outlets who were lying about him, quite frankly.
Yeah. It wasn't just unfounded, as you say there. It was completely false. Told people that Andrew Lamming engages in an activity called upskirting, which is taking the photos up women's skirts, and nothing could have been further from the truth, so much so that there were quite a number of media outlets and quite a number of big-name journalists that actually had to pay Andrew a lot of money. And good, I say, because, fake news just simply should not be tolerated, particularly when it affects people's lives like this. So it certainly affected... Go on. What were you going to say?
Yeah. No, I was just going to say that people often forget that, you're not just attacking a politician when you say something as grave as accusing someone of a sexual deviant. Andrew has a wife, a lovely wife, Alessia, and two daughters that are going, they're in grade 11 and grade 6 at school. And all of a sudden they have to rock up to school where, they're seeing on the front pages of the newspapers, which are available in libraries, right? That their father is, being ruminated to have engaged in that activity, which is just so incredibly unfair when it is baseless.
Yep.
People forget that, it affects a lot of other people. If it was just Andrew, himself as a 55-year-old man, he's a strong, tough, minded guy who can go out there and combat it. But his daughters at school, how are they able to combat it when, they're getting mocked in the schoolyard for the actions of their father or the lack of action of their father and just fake news reports? So, it's really tragic to hear. And look, I'm glad that he's been vindicated. But the sad reality is that he'll, in the eyes of a lot of people who sadly believe the media reports, he will always be a deviant, which is tragic. And I a lot of people say that, if they just say alleged, right, then it doesn't count. But I put it to you, I wouldn't trust my kid with an alleged pedophile, right? So the premise is there that just calling someone alleged does not alleviate them of, any reputational harm.
Correct.
They have to be held accountable. Just simply saying that there was a frivolous allegation and then saying, bang, that means we can report it, there needs to be a bit more substance to it, quite frankly.
Well, I remember talking to the then Attorney General, Christian Porter, about defamation law in Australia. The one thing that I have to say about defamation law, it certainly is a rich person's game. Basically, the deeper the pockets you have, the more likely you are going to win your case, either if you're defending a defamation case or you're pursuing a defamation case. In some cases, such as Andrew's, where it's clear cut, person told a porky, there is going to be recourse, but you still have to have deep pockets to walk up to the court. And so I suggested to Christian Porter at the time that perhaps we needed to change the regime, not as the media wanted it to be changed, so that they can say just about anything and get away with it, but to say that simply if a lie has been told that is derogatory about someone and it is in the mainstream press, that there be a simple tribunal set up. And the tribunal will require that media outlet to present proof that is to the level of that which would be accepted in a court of law for the statement that they have made. And if they can't provide that proof, then they must pay that person $1 million. And I think that would shut up a lot of media outlets from spewing the fake news that they did. Now, Christian didn't agree with me on that. He said, oh, they go apoplectic. And I think he found out the hard way, actually, about how that all goes down when there was some accusations, just dreadful accusations that I'm not even going to repeat here, that were made about him in the press that were completely and utterly without basis whatsoever. So it destroyed his career, and he was someone who potentially was on the trajectory to become Prime Minister of this country one day. If it can affect someone like that, it can affect anyone. Now, I know that this whole thing is really wrapped up in cancel culture because they called for you to be sacked from the LNP, essentially. It led to you forcibly resigning from the LNP the second time round. They called for you to be kicked out of your job, and that didn't happen, thankfully. I see now, though, that there is just a bizarre thing at play, a really, really bizarre thing at play. You work for the Australian Taxpayers Alliance right now. Is that right, Barclay?
Yeah, that's correct. And yes. As an economics researcher and an economics student at UQ, hopefully to be a graduate at the end of this year. And it's a great team to work with. But, yeah, that's my current role.
They are great guys, Brian Marlowe and the team, that do a lot of good there. And but you, the ATA, the Australian Taxpayers Alliance, had launched had hosted an event in Brisbane the other night. And after a left-wing journalist called up the LNP because two of its members, one former senator, Amanda Stoker, and one sitting state MP, I think that might have been Jared Blaise, if I'm not mistaken, were going to event. Who was it?
We actually had a panel of four, funnily enough.
And yes.
The panel of four consisted of economist Gene Tunney, who is a great economist, but he is nonpartisan. Then we had the shadow treasurer, David Janetsky. We also had the shadow minister for state development, Fiona Simpson, and also, as you pointed out, former senator Amanda Stoker. And it was the case that, we'd have planned this event for quite some time. And 2 hours before the event was about to start, we had the captain's call. And the captain's call was that the three people who were associated with the Liberal and National parties weren't able to be on our panel, where 90 guests had bought tickets to go and attend at the Paddo Tavern.
To hear from
them. Tragically, they had to pull out last minute, and
this was all because find a replacement. All because a left-wing journalist from The Guardian, I think it was, most people don't read The Guardian, but anyway, contacted the LNP and said, why are three of your people going to an event that is being run by an organisation that Barclay McGain works for? It seems to be such a long bow to draw in the first place, but yet the LNP succumbed to it. What does that say about the LNP, mate?
Well, definitely. And I think that, obviously we've got a state election coming up next year, but it is still 16 months away. And you're guessing that, I think it is the case that they are just so driven to win at all costs. And a lot of people think, win at all costs, that's exactly what we should be in politics. But when it costs you your values, when it costs you the ability to connect with voters and members of the public, which could vote or support you, and when it costs your ability to dispel people who want your movement to succeed to the curb and completely demoralize them, which quite frankly I was, then that's not a wise action to take. This win at all costs attitude whereby, you're going to cower into a corner when a journalist writes an article for an online publication which gets, 10 readers, then, it's actually quite sad. And I thought they got their sums wrong, particularly there. It's obviously, running a political party, you've got to be aware of electoral risk. I understand that, right? There's no doubting that, politicians do have to be cautious, right? I'm not saying that they should just be willy-nilly, right? But, this clearly was a very harmless event. These are people looking to talk about the state of the Queensland budget. And boy, don't we need to talk about it, because, we've got a government in Queensland here that consistently demonises the resources industry, coal in particular, yet they charge exorbitant coal royalties, and that's the only way that they're able to mask their budget blowouts. And that's the only reason why Queensland isn't in the state that Victoria is in, which is a recession and then some. Quite frankly, that's what Victoria is going through. And the only reason why we've got it slightly better here in Queensland is because of coal, which the Queensland government will. And soon enough, I think we might see that a lot of the investment which ordinarily would have come to Queensland might actually have to go interstate or overseas, which would be a tragedy. And then all of a sudden, we'd actually see the full extent of how our budget has been mismanaged in Queensland.
Yeah, you I think you're dead right there. It just frightens me on a lot of different fronts about how the LNP folded like a cheap deck of cards there. I mean... Yeah. The reality was that just think about it. Play this through. So there's a story in The Guardian and it might have popped up in a few other places. It wouldn't have been big news. A story in The Guardian that the two sitting state MPs and one ex-senator who was a private individual the last time I checked went along to an event that was hosted by the Australian Taxpayers Alliance, and one of the workers for that organisation happened to dress as Kyle Rittenhouse months ago or years ago, and also happened to ask a question that someone responded with an offensive statement to years before that. That really doesn't seem to me like it's going to switch many people's voting habits. I worry deeply about, one, cancel culture in and of itself, but I also worry, perhaps even more so, about the stomach and the temerity of the LNP. If you're going to fold on something like that, quite frankly, I don't know that you're going to take any risks whatsoever. And the only way that the LNP is going to defeat the Labor government in Queensland is by risk-taking. If they just become risk-averse and hope that the government implodes in and of itself, we're going to have Labor government continue on in Queensland for the foreseeable future, that is for sure. So what does all this say about the LNP's ticker, the LNP's backbone? I mean, you're now on the outside looking in on a party that you were once part of, that you were once really into the machinery and the back room, the back engine of it. Has it strayed from its foundations, do you think now, Barclay? Is it something that is problematic enough that it's going to cost them elections?
I think it may well get to that point. And I think that, you know, you mentioned it before, that absolutely no one is going to an election voting booth on whether that be a council, state and federal member, and voting based on whether Barclay McGain is a member of the Liberal National Parties.
Absolutely no one picking up the piece of paper going, oh, Barclay McGain, I'm going to put the LNP last. I don't think it's going to happen.
Exactly. It is simply absurd for anyone to suggest that. But that is what they would have us believe by a lot of these things. And we've seen, in Victoria, the Victorian division, obviously what they did, which was a travesty, to Moira Redeeming. She simply attended an event which happened to be crashed by, let's just say, dubious individuals. And I say that in both ways, whether they're in fact legitimate or they
I agree with that.
With other motives.
Plants.
Exactly. They were completely separate from what Moira was trying to do. She probably saw them come through and just went, huh? Had no clue why they were bothering to show up at a rally about women's rights, all of a sudden she's given the boot, and that is, it completely came out of the blue because, Victoria is not even close to an election. A lot of the times, and people will probably notice this, that politicians are often very cautious leading up to an election. Well, guess what? The election was 3.5 years away. So, I think that was politically motivated. I think Pesutto knew that he had an enemy there, and I wouldn't be surprised if the action that was taken against me, not to make anything sound grandiose, but because they tend to not like people who have those kind of views or beliefs or concerns for themselves. I think fundamentally, if you were to run a political party, if you're the controllers of the political party, you'd want people to form their views based on what the LNP believes and then have that be their view. Whereas, what we try to espouse, and what we hope to encourage is that people form a view and then see whether that aligns with the LNP. So that fundamentally they're conservatives first, and then they just so happen to be in the LNP, not the other way around. If you find yourself, tossing up what your opinion is on a topic and you have to research what the leader of the LNP's opinion was and then adopt that opinion, well, then quite frankly, I think you need to have a look at the way you approach politics in general, because politics ideally should be about conviction. And sadly, for a lot of people who want to climb the hierarchy, they're devoid of actually any ability to debate topics or ideas by themselves. So it's tragic. Hopefully, it's something that, people, I think, returning to your original question there, George, it was about, the Liberal National Party's trajectory in the future. And look, if you were to go to their website and you read the LNP constitution and the We Believe message, that is 100% what I aligned with. And I know people might think, what? But fundamentally, if you look at how this party was founded by Robert Menzies, an unashamed, conservative, Then you'd actually realize that, you know, there was a lot of beliefs that were founded and demonstrate, you know, a truly conservative vision for Australia. But the way it transgresses from those beliefs is when the people filling the office bearer positions or becoming MPs suddenly start straying from that belief. And to my mind, George, yeah. You know, we have a number of them, you know, recently in Victoria. I think it was Matthew Buck, who was the he is the deputy leader of the upper house there in Victoria. And he's penned an article in Fairfax, Sydney Morning Herald, saying Menzies is dead. The Liberal Party needs to reform. And whenever they say the Liberal Party needs to reform, it's never to actually get back to its roots, which it was founded for. It's all about creating it. You know, they use these buzzwords like modernized, and sensible. And what that essentially means is becoming a pale imitation of Labor and exactly Labor light. And we saw that, Tony Abbott himself said, and the reason I quote Tony Abbott is because he's really the last, prime minister of this country or leader of any major political party to achieve a resounding majority in the lower house. And, every government since then, including Albo, haven't been able to muster more than 80 seats. By the way, you only need 76 for a majority and they're just scraping through. So Tony Abbott, because he had some convictions, some backbone, he was rewarded at the ballot box, and he was, anything but a pale imitation of Labor. You know, he was fundamentally, he literally wrote the policy, which is now mainstream across all political parties, about how we approach asylum seekers and refugees. We fundamentally want to stop the boats, not just for our own national security, but because a lot of the people coming over were actually drowning at sea. And that was, endangering themselves. So, that ended up being a common sense policy, a conservative policy at that. That has now become mainstream. It's because it took some courage, but it's finally worked. So, I think we've seen the playbook there, that if you do lean into your values and forget the idea of modernizing or becoming a Labor light party, then you can actually be rewarded and achieve some great goals.
Yeah, look, I think that you're spot on with that assessment there, Barclay, and it's probably much to the detriment of the LNP that they don't have a mind like yours inside the tent now, but that's their hard luck. Let's move to cancel culture while we've still got you, and I know you have to leave very soon, but what has affected you repeatedly now is a sign of, firstly, the pack mentality of the media, the sort of, if they think they've gotten a bit of blood, they'll keep on going in for a bite. But underlying all of that is cancel culture. They have tried to get you removed, or they got you removed from the LNP. They've tried to get you sacked from your job. They've tried to shut down this event that you're associated with. What do you think we can do about this problem? Because we thought that we'd, really rubbished the idea of cancel culture a long time ago, that it was something that was passé, but actually it's something that still rears its ugly head in our democracy from time to time, and you are case in point. What thoughts do you have on cancel culture, and what can we do?
Yeah, well, look, one thing, I have to address is the one thing that's definitely kept me going is I've actually seen how bad cancel culture can get. And as I said, when I got, cancelled, it wasn't just that I focused on my own life and was very insular about, what does this mean for my future? Am I ever going to be able to get a great job? Am I ever going to be able to support my family? It was actually more like a hang on. This wouldn't just affect me. This would affect anyone in our society who happens to slip up. So, I tried to at least take a macro picture to look at, is this healthy for our society? I learned the hard way, and it wasn't by my circumstance, but it was actually through a friend of mine, Wilson Gavin, who I believe you may have known as well, George.
Oh, I know Wilson very well. Yeah.
He was a former member of the Liberal and National Party. And, he was someone who was, traditional conservative, a Roman Catholic. And he was also, a homosexual as well. And that was something I never made him feel uncomfortable for. And there's a lot of other people in our circle who are fully okay with him being able to live that life. What he did was he was also a he believed in the rights of kids to not be subjected to left-wing propaganda and filth, and that is fundamentally what is being funded by the Brisbane City Council and Drag Queen Storytime. And him and a number of others
An LNP council
took the bold step. Yes, exactly. It's important we point that out. Took the bold step of actually going to protest that event and essentially saying that, hey, drag queens are not for kids. They weren't out there assaulting people, as we saw with a lot of the Black Lives Matter protests. They were simply saying, hey, guys, this is not on. These kids, they're 3 and 4 years old. They don't need to be subjected to stories by people who've literally won awards in the adult film industry. And for that crime, the footage ended up going viral on social media, as all these things do. Whenever you attack the Alphabet Brigade, as we often like to call them, the LG Plus community. And he was cancelled. And as I pointed out, when saying this, Wilson tragically took his own life. And that was, to my mind, and I'm not going to ever pretend to know fully what he was going through at that time, but I truly do believe that the backlash and the media requests and the vitriol that he received from a lot of the hate-filled lefties online actually led to that decision fundamentally, which is an awful thing. Just 21 years old, and that is a life with so much, future and so many years to live out. That was ended, in just such odd circumstances, such bizarre circumstances, and it's really tragic. And I would hate to see that happen to another friend of mine. And it's not to be too graphic, George, but I'm sure there's a number of people out there who would very much like that I take that action. But I can tell you, there's nothing that has ever crossed my mind to ever think about that. And it is, thankfully, if you ever find light in a truly awful circumstance, it's that Wilson has given myself and a lot of my friends the drive to keep on going and to realize that to stand up for conservative values, you should not be ashamed about. And, we've got a UQ Monarchist League at our University of Queensland, and I'm still a student, where we run the annual Wilson Gavin Gala Ball. And every year we raise, I think last year we raised $7,000 for students for an organization rather called Borderline Youth, which helps young people going through mental crises. And, it's not one of the, you'll be glad to know, your listeners will be glad to know, it's not one of those global charities where all the money goes to the top, the executive who drive around in Ferraris and a small crumb goes to some poor African child. This is actually a Brisbane-based charity. It's run by a good friend of mine who recently became an OAM. He's a great friend. And, this is something that we are all too happy to do, and it's all in Wilson's legacy, all in his name. And, we're happy to keep on going with that. And we really do think that we're changing what is a truly tragic circumstance and finding a bit of light there. And to sum it all up, that is the reason why I'm trying to get out there. And when people hear the name Wilson Gavin, they won't think of the guy who always controversial. He protested drag queens. But actually the guy who actually decided to stand up for something and who created a legacy of conservative people who are charitable and also believe in their values and are happy to stand up for those values. So if we can make any kind of legacy, that's definitely the one I want to leave.
Yeah, well, that's fantastic, mate. That's really, really good to hear, Barclay. And I think that, you're right about Wilson Gavin. He was a warrior for the cause. And, mate, I know this might not be PC to say. We're talking about political correctness and council culture, but the fact is that it was the media elite who wanted to kick him. It was the socialist Twitterati, all of those people that sit on their buddy keyboards, the keyboard warriors that were bullying him, that led to that death. And as far as I'm concerned, they killed him. They killed him. Yep. I think that we shouldn't let that happen again in this country, which is why I'm so aggrieved at this cancel culture, because it not only affects people's livelihoods, and that's what they want, but, it also affects people's lives, as we've seen in the instance of Wilson Gavin. So more power to you. I know that you have to leave us now. Thanks very much for joining us for the George Christensen Show, Barclay. We'll have to have you on some other time and talk more about this important matter. We'll be back after this quick break here on TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Immigration brings with it a whole set of problems that the left dare not discuss. One of the byproducts of having an overflow of migrants, both legal and illegal in America, is that our public schools are being overrun by their kids. The Center for Immigration Studies has done an analysis of recent information from the Census Bureau, and the results are frightening. The report, Mapping the Impact of Immigration on Public Schools. Among the findings, in 2021, 29% of public school students from immigrant households were from households headed by an illegal immigrant, and that doesn't take into account the recent border crisis. The 11 million public school students in 2021 from immigrant-headed households, legal and illegal, accounted for nearly one out of four students in our public schools. This is double the 11% in 1990 and more than triple the 7% in 1980. Immigration has added significantly to the population of students who speak a foreign language at home. Folks, our kids already can't read or do math up to grade level, and the issues just mentioned are bound to make things a whole lot worse. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
You better lock up your sons when the ex-girls hit town. We're an irresistible force. We have the power to get whatever and whoever we want. Let's go. Time to find somewhere hot. We cut through the traffic. No one can stand in our way. Wait there. Don't move a muscle, the paramedic said. The driver said I just ran out in front of him. I can't remember anything, but I've been told I'll be on crutches for a while, and my miniskirt-wearing days are over.
Too much alcohol makes you feel invincible when you're most vulnerable. At least 77% of pedestrians killed in road accidents at night had been drinking. Alcohol. Know your limits.
Thanks for listening and being part of the George Christensen Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Thanks very much for joining us for this final section of the George Christensen Show here on the fantastic TNT Radio, the global voice for freedom. And I want to continue on the topic of cancel culture, because this is most important. It is an insidious thing that overwhelms a lot of people. I've had my share of cancel culture type events. I've got two that I can talk to you about quite freely and openly here. One of them was when I launched the Eureka Free Press news website. I had a media outlet that reported the fact and reported that I was taking donations off PayPal as if that was a bad thing. Well, it was donations. I wasn't holding a gun to anyone's head. People can choose to donate or they can choose not to. But as a result, within a matter of weeks, PayPal actually debanked me. They scratched me. They removed me from their system. I am not able to use PayPal as a consumer, as a receiver or a giver of finance anymore. And that is the main way that you do online transactions these days. So I was completely scrubbed. And you got to ask the question, well, why? Was there something that I did that was terrible, something that I did that broke PayPal's rules? Well, all I was doing was asking for donations for the establishment of a new pro-freedom news website. There was nothing else involved in it. The news website wasn't even up and running. So there were no articles that PayPal could have found offensive. There was nothing on there that was racist. There was nothing on there that was anti-vaxxer, as they say. There was nothing on there that was sexist. There was nothing on there that was homophobic. There was nothing on there that was transphobic, because simply there was nothing on there. The website hadn't even been set up. But because the media, the fake news legacy media, reported the fact that I was going to set up a pro-freedom news website that may have things on it that people found offensive and that I was using PayPal, that was a reason enough for PayPal to actually de-platform me. They scrubbed me. I went to bed one night. Luckily, I cleared the account because the fundraising for that venture was going well. I cleared the account. I woke up in the morning to be met by an email that said, we have reviewed your account and you are now barred from using PayPal for life, a lifetime ban. That is insane, folks. But that is what cancel culture can do. I could point to you to another example that's affected me. I have a Facebook page, and I hate it like all you do, but there are many people that actually use Facebook, so it is a powerful tool to get messages out there. While I was an MP, and even after I was an MP, I used to get posts that went into the reach of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, in some cases, millions. Right now, the reach would potentially be hundreds, on a good day, thousands. And the reason is because I've posted some of those truths that must not be uttered, truths about the vaccine, or the so-called vaccine. It's really gene therapy that's masquerading as a vaccine. I posted about the January 26th protesters. And actually, I could go in depth with this, but needless to say, one of those fake fact checkers fact checked me, said that I had written false information on there when I could have demonstrably proven it to be true. But as a result, there is no appeal. There is no appeal mechanism. There is no court of law. It's just simply this pinhead over here who calls himself a fact checker and is deigned so by Facebook and the other social media outlets. He has said you've spread false news. So we are going to cancel you. Big tech then censors you. And that's exactly what happened to me. Now, you could be subject to cancel culture. We know it still goes on. We just heard the story of Barclay McGain. It's a pervasive and divisive force. It appears on social media. It appears in the media, the fake news legacy media. It appears in real life. And it actually hurts people in terms of their jobs, in terms of their families, in terms of their associations, in terms of their lives, as we've just heard in the case of the late Wilson Gavin. It's the phenomenon of publicly shaming or boycotting people or companies and organizations that others have deemed offensive. Now, offense is always in the eye of the beholder. What offends you might not offend me. So how can it be that this is deemed a bad thing when offense is so subjective? Now, some people say that it's a great tool for holding other people accountable, but the reality is that cancel culture spirals into harassment and mob mentality. Now, I want to give you some tools of what to do if you are subjected to cancel culture, this collective outrage that you know morphs into a witch hunt. Cancel culture, while you know we have groups like the Me Too movement out there, is actually engaging in trial by mob justice, not real justice. And individuals are cancelled based on false accusations, minor infractions, and it leads to serious consequences. So if you find yourself at the center of a cancel culture storm, you may feel overwhelmed, you may feel the end is nigh, anxious, you know, unsure what you're going to do. Here's what I say to do. One, assess the situation. Before you respond, take a deep breath, a step back, and assess the situation objectively. You know, is this going to be the end of everything for you? The answer is nearly always no. It's crucial to consider the scale of the backlash and the potential consequences that might be. And if really you realize that this is a storm in a teacup, it can be over and done with, then recognize that and move on. Respond appropriately or don't respond at all. Now, if the accusations are legitimate, well, you know, own up, you made a mistake. You can say that and be big enough to own up. But if it's not, if this is just fake news, as it often is, then present the facts clearly, clarify any misunderstandings, and here's the number one thing that people, including politicians, always fail to adhere to, and that is that when the media ask you a question, you are not obliged to respond. They are not a court of law. They are not police officers. You don't have to respond. Take a break from social media, folks. That's another key tip here. During a cancel culture storm, you can get consumed by the negativity and vitriol that goes on social media. Get off it. Get off it. It's probably good to get off once in a while anyway. And seek support. Reach out to friends, family members. If you need professional support, if you are in a headspace that is very, very damaging, make sure you do reach out for professional support because it can be challenging. And at the end of it, you know what's going to be there for you that has weathered that storm, that cancel culture storm? There's going to be growth and there's going to be positive change. You can use the experience to learn to grow. You can use it to become more resilient. You can use it to withstand other attacks that might come your way. So that's the positive that can come out of finding yourself in a cancel culture storm. It's a complex topic. It's a controversial topic. You know, that people think that when they can rage against someone and stir people up against someone, that they're doing some sense of justice, or they're holding people accountable. But the reality is, in more cases than not, it leads to unjust consequences for those who are the target of cancel culture. We need to understand it. We need to be, I think, very sympathetic to individuals that are caught in the crosshairs of cancel culture, whether they are of the same political persuasion and ideology and background and faith as us or not, because the worm turns, and that worm can come around one day and turn to you. And most of all, we need to ensure that we follow those steps that I just outlined there to actually overcome the storm of cancel culture, assess, respond appropriately or don't respond, take a break from social media, seek support, and use the challenge to grow and for positive change. Thanks very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to me in this episode of the George Christensen Show here on TNT Radio. We've got Ross Cameron coming up next. Listen to that guy. He's fantastic, Ross. Very great mind. Over and out. Talk to you next week.